Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Wendy's new Biggie Deals lets you choose whatever you're in the mood for. It's like a music mixing board of deals, and you're the producer. Go with some chill folk music with a JBC in the $4 Biggie Bite snack. Try the drum and bass of deals with a double stack in the $6 Biggie Bag. Or go full-on sandwich symphony with an $8 Biggie Bundle, the grand finale of snacking. And the best part? They all come with napkins! $4, $6, and $8 Biggie Deals how you want them. At Wendy's.
Price and participation may vary. Single items at regular price. Prices may be higher in Alaska, California, and Hawaii.
On the Empire Podcast this week, we've got a friend. In them, friends. We've got friends in them. Yes, it's Toy Story 5 stars Woody and Buzz themselves, Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. How exciting. Plus, the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that, for one line only, has been replaced
by a minor celebrity.
Wow. The ego on Helen O'Hara. Unbelievable.
You asked me.
Did I ask you, Helen O'Hara? Did I forget to recruit an actual minor celebrity for that bit? And then in a panic, asked one of you two guys to step up the plate? Oh, dear. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt. Welcome to the Empire Podcast. I am joined this week by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Geek queen and minor celebrity Helen O'Hara is here. How are you?
Look, we just had a big discussion about, like...
Do I recruit?
Yeah, who do you recruit to?
What's this in reference to, by the way?
This is in reference to, like, not just Pixar, but many animated houses.
Many wonderful houses.
Like, let's say, a Ryan Seacrest doing a voice cameo in their animated film. And then when that character comes over to the UK, they will have, like, AN radio DJ...
Yes.
Of doubtful prominence.
Yes.
Step into the same role.
Yeah.
And so we were trying to figure out what's the equivalent of AN radio DJ of dubious prominence. And I figured that was pretty much me.
It was you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much always a radio DJ. And pretty much always a radio DJ I've never heard of as well. Two of them in this week's Toy Story 5.
Two of them in Toy Story 5.
And I always wonder, like you say, it's a Ryan Seacrest, but sometimes it's an actual actor that these people have replaced.
True, true.
And I always think, what if that person's on holiday in the UK and they're proud as punch and they've gone to Juilliard, for God's sake, and they've worked for years to learn their craft. Every facet of their life, become a master of their craft. They've gone into voice acting. They've auditioned for this one-line role in Toy Story 5. They're in Toy Story 5.
Huge fans of Pixar,
huge
probably.
Fans. They cried when they got to the recording studio because, oh my God, this is the place where Toy Story was made and Tom Hanks was probably standing here when he said, "You're my favorite deputy." Oh my God.
These people probably brought their, like, aged grandmothers.
Aged grandmother.
Small children.
Oh my Lord. And then they go on holiday to the UK, you know, maybe want to get away from the World Cup for a little bit because it's just World Cup fever over there at the moment in the States, isn't it? Just World Cup, World Cup, World Cup. So they come over here and they go, hey, I know, I'm going to bring my entire family to see Toy Story 5 because it opens this weekend. They buy tickets to see it in London and then they get a second mortgage and everyone comes in and he goes, this is my line, this is my line, it's my line, this is my bit. And then it's Jordan North from Capital Radio.
Yeah.
And that guy, who's worked for years to get to this point in his career, is just slumped in his seat, dejected. His family hate him. They turn on him.
Wow.
They go, what is this?
This is getting dark.
What have you done?
Oh.
His wife leaves him that night.
For Jordan North?
For Jordan North.
Oh, no.
It's a twist I did not see coming.
I didn't expect that.
It's wild.
God.
Did they stop to think about this? The repercussions of this?
The repercussions are huge.
Huge repercussions. James Dyer is also here, the mad titan of movies. And James, for once, you showed a little bit of humility. You did not put yourself forward as a minor celebrity.
No, I consider myself a major celebrity. Obviously, I was ineligible.
I don't want to beg, but we're available to do lines.
wow.
Yeah.
In the Toy Story or Pixar franchise. I don't mean lines of cocaine.
Mm. No.
Lines I mean of dialogue.
We can deliver.
Snort yeah. your dialogue.
We will snort it right up.
Right.
And,
right off the porcelain.
Yeah. So and what do you, we can deliver what
do we,
those lines.
Do we want to be in like Toy Story 6? Do we want to be in like Zootropolis 3? Do we want to be in, you know.
I see you, you're more of like, a minion.
Yeah. Helen said, oh, yeah, perfect.
Oh, my God,
perfect.
Thanks.
James say banana.
Banana.
See, I can't do it. I can't do it. Banana. I can't do it.
No.
See, I'm
it's
letting
hopeless.
The side down. Do you see why they can't? We come as a package deal.
Of course.
As well, I should say. Any
like the minions.
Precisely. Mm. Any voice casting directors listening to this right now, you think, oh, I want that sexy Northern Irish voice in my animated film.
Sexy you don't Northern sound Northern Irish. Irish.
You don't sound Northern Irish. Northern do I. Northern do I.
Is there such a thing as a sexy Northern Irish voice? Do we
oh,
have one
God,
of those?
Oh, yes, there is.
Who is? Who's?
Ted Hastings.
Ted Hastings.
Ted Hastings.
I didn't come up the barn in a bubble. Oh, say it again. Say it again, you sexy undercover cop boss, you. I've never seen it. Liam, big Liam.
Big Liam.
So he does.
I guess. Back in the day a bit, I guess.
Oh, I'm Dr. Patton Westlake, so I am.
All right, we'll allow it.
Sexy?
I mean...
There's other Jimmy Nesbitt.
Sexy.
Uh-huh.
No? Kenneth Branagh?
Doesn't very often do a Northern Irish accent.
No, I bet he's forgotten how to.
Oh, I bet he hasn't, but no. I don't think he does it when he wants to be sexy. I don't know why I think that.
Sexy Ken.
Wow.
And we're back to Toy Story again, aren't we?
Are.
Oh, no.
All right. Anyway, welcome both. I hope you are both well. I could probably deliver that with a little bit more conviction.
I was about to say, the lack of sincerity in your well-wishing was quite extraordinary.
All right. Shall we have a questiones?
Sí.
Sí, I also speak Italian. Let me see. Here is a question. It came to me the other day on Instagram. This comes from a person called Coco. Coco Monkey. Coco Monkey. Coco Monkey.
Wow. The reading lesson's going well then.
Now I see why I didn't get the Toy Story 5 gig. Can't read. When he does read, yeah. He delivers things in a sort of depressed monotone. And also they've written in notes and then they've circled it. Too yeah. sexy? Question mark, question yeah. mark, question mark. Here it comes, the question from Coco Monkey. Which movie would you want a sequel to? That is the title of the first movie, but with an S added to the end.
The dollar sign being implied, presumably.
Yes. Yes. Should we once again explain very quickly for those who do not know the origin of this story? James, you're a big aliens guy.
This is the potentially apocryphal story that when Cameron...
I don't think it's... I don't think
Gail Ann Hurd said it happened.
I mean, maybe it happened. He's never said it to me and, you know, we've spoken about it many, many times.
Therefore, it didn't
happen. Okay. Is that he wrote Alien on a whiteboard, put an S on the end and put dollar signs through the S. That is how you make money, aliens. Thank you very much.
And this is, he was pitching this to 20th Century Fox and this is what he did.
Yeah.
He went up, he wrote Alien and then added an S and a dollar sign. The chutzpah of that is incredible. It's true. When he turned around, the Fox executives all had dollar signs in their eyes and their jaws dislocated and their tongues fell
out
in the
like
the cartoon
carpet.
Styling.
Mm.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. So that is the story that James Cameron, he already had the title Aliens, but this is how he sold Fox on it. So let's take this question then. So what movie would you add an S to come up with a sequel?
So this is quite hard because you haven't warned us about this in advance.
No, I forgot.
Okay, great. Thanks. But we kind of need a singular noun, I feel like.
Do we?
I mean, it depends how abstract, I guess, you want to get, right? I mean, what are we thinking? Like, could we pitch, for example... and stay with me here, the new Bond film as Goldfingers.
and the villain has literal gold fingers, all of them, and I mean gold thumbs perhaps as well, but gold fingers.
Well, thumbs are fingers, aren't they?
No, they're thumbs.
They're digits. They're technically fingers.
They're not.
They are technically fingers. It's a question of Trivial Pursuit. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to disallow your response.
What?
Yeah.
Trivial Pursuit, which famously said that it was Luke Skywalker that cut the open the Tauntaun in Empire Strikes Back.
Is the thumb a finger? Yes.
It's a thumb.
It's also okay, a finger. Fine.
Is the finger a thumb?
No, look, not all fingers are thumbs, but all thumbs are fingers. Come on.
It's not difficult. Gold fingers.
Yes.
And what would the plot of this movie be? What would James Bond or James Bonds be doing?
Maybe he's really good at mercy. You know the mercy game
Right.
No? You know the one?
Okay.
You know the one?
No, I don't know the
one. You don't know the game mercy where you would interlock fingers with someone and attempt to bend their hands back. Do you know what this is
called? No, I've never played this game.
Oh, that's
no,
really
you didn't
mean.
Have it in Northern Ireland. But,
no, we played other games.
Yes, I'm sure you did.
In Northern Ireland in the 1980s.
Okay, well, let's scratch the mercy game then. That won't work. Also, there's a film called Mercy and it's not called Mercies. Mm. So.
No, this is true. All right, so this is Bond fighting multiple gold fingers. It's weird because my mind went to Bond as well. And my mind went to Dr. No.
Dr. No.
Because there would have no, but
that's
would it
a
be,
very different film.
Would Doctors it be Dr. No's or would it be Doctors No? No.
So, like, Dr. No has, like, let's say, twin children who have followed him into the medical profession, or at least achieved a doctorate of some sort, and are now Doctors No.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, you know, attorneys general.
Yeah.
Doctors No.
Or courts martial.
Courts martial. Yeah.
Or sendings off.
Mm. Yeah. Ooh, I hadn't thought about that one.
Yeah, you see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people say sending offs, but it's not. It's sending off.
Makes sense.
Dr. Knows just feels like a sequel to Roxanne, so that wouldn't work.
I mean, that would work. I would absolutely watch that.
Yeah.
Also, he wasn't a doctor, though, so.
He might be now.
He could have gained, you're right. She was working on her PhD.
Right.
Maybe he wanted to get one as well. You're right.
This is Steve Martin, of course.
Steve Martin and Roxanne.
Roxanne!
Which is a remake of Cyrano de Bergerac.
An improvement.
Cyrano's on Bergerac.
An improvement on Cyrano de Bergerac, I think you'll find.
Nope.
And great film. 1987, he plays C.D. Bales, of course, in that. And I think he can absolutely get his doctorate. He's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy. No argument there.
Yeah, he's at peace with his nose at the end of the movie.
For some reason, the one that's in my head is Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
Isn't his son called Young Forrest?
There was going to be, at one point, a mooted sequel, wasn't there, with him and the son kind of growing up. But I don't think they figured out
Forrest
a way to make
Gump.
It. Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
I just like saying it. I don't have a story. I don't have a pitch. Okay. I just think Forrest Gump. Or how about Inceptions?
Inceptions.
Inceptions. Because I like this. I like this kind of sequel naming format.
Mm.
Another one I like that I think is underrated and hasn't been used enough is Another.
Yes.
Another Stakeout.
Yep.
Another 48 Hours. You know,
Another Casablanca. Another Godfather.
That would be incredible. Another Casablanca.
Well, it could go along and be released with Citizens Kane. So,
Citizens Kane. Yes, very much so. Rosebuds. I think that format is underutilized, and I would like to bring it back. Of course, the S has been used before in other franchises, or since, more accurately, Predator.
Predators.
Predator. but could you do Predators Badlands?
Predators.
Could you have? Could you have the sequel to the Adrian Brody Predators, which, of course, as we all know, is the third best Predator film, and just after Predator. I can't say that fucking
word. I think it's the fourth for me.
And Predator Badlands. Right. Where are you putting that?
So, Predator, number one.
None of us can say this word, by the way.
Predator.
This is a Northern
Predator,
Irish thing.
Prey. And the one that was recent.
Badlands.
Yeah, and then Predators.
I'm putting Predators above Prey.
No, I'm putting Predators below Prey.
Prey.
Yeah. No.
No, it doesn't work.
Because it's like sheep. Like, it's just prey and then
prey
multiple
is just prey.
Yeah.
You can't have sheep.
But Predators was interesting because Predators...
I will never get bored of hearing you attempt to say that word.
I had to say it for an ad read today. I had to take three goes at it before it was in any way discernible to the ear.
Predator.
And of course, yeah, I'm going to see Predator. Predator. So Predator Badlands. Predators. Predators. Predator. Predator. Predators. It does deliver on the promise of the title.
It does have multiple
predators. It has multiple predators. Mm. But here's my thing. Mm. So does Predator, too.
That's true.
That's true.
So I don't think it was necessarily new, whereas Aliens, by the time Alien came out, was new. You liked one of these things? Well, here's like 100 of them.
Yeah.
And now there's a bigger one as well.
That would be scary.
That would be very, very scary.
How about Alienses?
Sounds too much like elevenses.
Damn it. Well, I mean, that sounds like a good thing, to be honest. Then, you know, people go along, maybe have a little sandwich.
Are we limiting ourselves to genre? How about Gandhis?
Multiple Gandhis.
Multiple Gandhis in one film.
There were multiple Gandhis.
There were multiple Gandhis, yes.
Kind of be the sequel, wouldn't it? It would be like the continuing story.
With a dollar sign through the S.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, that would be inappropriate.
Well, of course, Aliens didn't actually do the dollar sign.
More the pity. You can only imagine the marketing department fought for it.
This time it's more.
Yeah. Money. Yeah. In brackets.
It's just a disappointing thing that a lot of sequels never did that. Like Wall Street could have been Wall Streets. Instead of Wall Street, Money Never Sleep. And then it could literally have had the dollar sign.
The dollar sign. Although you could still do it in the street, to be fair.
What pound?
Like the S.
Oh, but I equate E with pound. I equate S with dollar.
Well, E would be euro.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but this is a Brit-centric podcast.
Oh, I see.
Here, Helen.
Right. Is it? Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. None of your foreign muck on the Empire podcast.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do a quick franchise run, as we often do on this on questions when we run out of inspiration. So Bond we've done.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So you could have Doctor's No. I think that's better than Doctor Knows.
Yeah.
Right. You could Goldfingers.
Another Skyfall.
Octopussies.
That somehow sounds worse.
It does sound worse, doesn't it?
I can't say why. It just does.
Yeah.
Mm, wrong.
Wouldn't you like to see that film? I think I have.
I think you might have, but I think I might have seen that film.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-mm. No. Helen says no to that one. Star Wars. Is there anything in the Star Wars canon that lends itself to this?
The Phantom Menaces.
I like that. Attacks of the Clones, or is it Attack of the Cloneses?
I think the latter is funnier.
The Rises of Skywalker.
The Rises of Skywalker. Good movies.
Yeah.
good movies.
Good movies.
Good movies. What about Solo? Could Solo have a little ironic
Solos?
S? Yeah.
I mean, actually, the plural form technically is soli.
Or duets.
Yes. Well, but that would be duets. Oh, I see. So Solo's sequel should be duet.
Solo becomes duet. Yeah.
Hand duet.
Mm.
I like them. MCU. Anything in the MCU? Would you like to see Thor's? Well, Helen, would you like to see Captain America's, the first Avengers?
I did see Captain America's in, was it Infinity War or Endgame? Endgame.
I think it's Captain America.
Maybe so. Captain's America. Yeah.
America's asses.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Helen's just passed out.
Mm. The problem with sometimes is you can't always pluralize it and keep the meaning. Like if it's Fast and Furious is... It sounds like somebody's on a diet. Like it doesn't work, you know. So you do have to choose your battles with this particular format.
Their barbecues would be a lot less fun if that were the case.
I'll
just have a salad.
Yeah.
Dom.
And can I have the light beer? Thanks.
You could return. You can return to the subject or the location of a film in a future sequel. So you could have Fast and Furious Tokyo Drifts.
But then it sounds like there's been a terrible earthquake in Tokyo.
It's like a Roland Emmerich film.
Yeah.
Well,
there is actually an incredible sci-fi book about Japan basically sinking into the sea after an earthquake. It was written in Japan in like the 50s or 60s
or something. Right, okay.
Anyway, that's what that sounds like. Tokyo Drifts is...
All right. Well, while we're on the subject of Japan...
Godzilla's. Word watch.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I really would.
More than one Godzilla?
Yeah.
That would be pretty fucking
it's
amazing.
It's kind of Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, but I'll take it anyway.
Ah, but Mechagodzilla is not a Godzilla.
That's
this
true.
Is another Godzilla.
Two Godzillas.
Like what?
Or more.
Time-traveling Godzilla or a Godzilla from a different portal?
So one of the Godzillas has like samurai armor or something, and then the other Godzilla is just like a modern dude?
Who's making that armor?
A lot of people, James.
A lot of people. Obviously. All right.
Godzillas versus Titanics.
Yes.
Titanics.
Now you're talking.
One starts in New York, one starts at the, and they meet in the middle. And
that's why did they crash?
Yeah.
Genuinely, I mean, let's go back to Jim Cameron, right?
Okay.
Avatars.
Terminators.
Terminators. How did they never make this movie? Terminators. Where you have more than one Terminator. It's never been done before.
I can't believe you never thought of that. It feels like an open goal.
It does.
Mm. Yeah.
You could have, I don't know, maybe one Terminator going back in time and then another Terminator follows him. Uh-huh. This is fertile ground for a sequel.
That could really work. Can you imagine?
What if there was like literally hundreds of Terminators? Like the most we've ever seen is in Terminator Salvation, but nobody remembers that film.
No. So you're thinking of like hundreds of beavers, but with Terminators.
That's what he's thinking.
Yeah.
It's usually what he's thinking. So
it's a well-known fact. Every 6 seconds, I think of hundreds of beavers. And now octopuses, apparently.
Oh, no.
But yeah, Terminators. Terminators would be... Oh, that's exciting. I think we should go back to James Cameron. I think the two that I'm most excited about that have pitched me are Godzillas and Terminators. I think that is very, very exciting.
How about Diehards? Because you can't put the S on the die, because then it sounds like it's Latin, and I think it would confuse people.
Die is hard.
Yeah, DA is hard, you know? So I feel like it would have to be Diehards.
Die is hard sounds like a Judd Apatow comedy about casino work. Starring Will Ferrell as a croupier.
Yes.
Dice hard.
Yeah, okay, we're probably done.
I think we're
Hey, that was a winner. Double six.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, thank you so much to Coco Monkey on Instagram, or Coco Monkeys, should I say, for that question. I hope we did it some justice. I'm not so sure that we did. But if you want to have your question read out on the Emperor Podcast, get in touch with me on the Instagram. That's where I'm taking questions for the most part these days. Wait for a slightly panicked shout out every now and again. I didn't do one this week because Coco Monkey sent that question in a couple of days ago, and I was like, that's the question. I must tell James and Helen so they can prepare.
And it's a good job you did.
And then I got up this morning and I was like, I must send this to James and Helen. And then I got on the train and I got distracted by a shiny thing outside the window, and that was that. That was all she wrote.
I realized that now.
In fairness, this is really your fault. Like, at no point did either of you send me a message going, hey, Chris, what's the question this week? Because then I would have done it. I would have gone, hey, the question's about adding an S to the title of something.
I mean, we ask you quite a lot of questions that do not always provoke an immediate response. So
I'm a very busy man, Helen. I'm a minor celebrity.
I'm a minor celebrity.
Yeah. Well, you're just the twat she replaced.
Anyway. So shall we have a little break?
Let's.
All right, we'll be back in 2 seconds. This is a chance for people to sell you some stuff, including maybe me failing horribly to say the word predator.
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 Badlands.
Back in a sec. All right, it is time for us to dig deep into the week's movie news. And there's actually been a ton of movie news.
Has there?
Yes.
Okay.
It's good that one of us has been paying attention.
Loads of news.
I have written down quite a lot of movie news for us to talk about, including only one place to start is the trailer that was the talk of the town when it hit the internet yesterday, to the point where when we came in today, Helen and James went, there's a new Spider-Man Brand New Day trailer, and then they had to quickly watch it, because there is a final trailer for Destin Daniel Cretton's Spider-Man Brand New Day, which is out at the end of July, and sees Tom Holland return as Peter Parker. And this one sheds a lot more light, I guess, on the plot of this movie, which is that Peter is undergoing some sort of puberty-style mutation where he is actually producing webs and he's getting into some sort of freaky-deaky spider powers that he doesn't quite understand where it's coming from. For help, he turns to Dr. Bruce Banner, played, of course, by Mark Ruffalo, who just happens to be in New York and who is human now. Last time we saw him, he was the fully integrated, smart Hulk version of himself. Professor Hulk is what I think they call it in the MCU. He's not that now. He's just a professor, and he has some sort of inhibitor on his wrist that if this inhibitor breaks, kid, then the Hulk may come out and it might not be a Hulk you want to meet. And Gee, I wonder why they mentioned that.
Chekhov's bracelet.
Yeah. And so we get to see that there is going to be a Hulk-Spidey face-off in this trailer. We get a little bit more of the Punisher. We get a little bit more of Michael Mando as the Scorpion. Mm. We get a little bit more of Peter trying to bond with MJ and Ned, Zendaya, of course, and Jacob Batalon, who don't know him anymore because of the spell that Doctor Strange cast at the end of Spider-Man No Way Home. And there's all sorts of stuff going on there. It's a mysterious bad guy who is fucking with Peter's mind, seemingly.
And hopping like from person to person, a sort of possession thing. It's quite creepy.
Like the classic Denzel Washington 1998 thriller Fallen.
I think that's what we were all thinking.
Time is on my side. So what do we make of the trailer? Now I've described it in excruciating detail.
I thought it looked really, really good. I'm excited for this film. I'm looking forward to it. I feel like I'm not in the tank, but I'm pretty close to the tank. I'm standing next to the tank. I'm tank adjacent.
Mm. Tank castle.
Definitely. And I think this looks great. I think it looks like they're giving Tom Holland loads and loads to work with, you know, some more dramatic stuff to play, and that's kind of where he's most comfortable. And I mean, I do worry about there being potentially too many villains. You know, this is a perennial complaint of mine, but I trust that they can find a way to kind of weave these stories together.
Mm. Yeah. Many villains, many allies, just many characters. I think, like, Tom Holland is so effortlessly charming as Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And I think we're all quite invested in his relationship with Zendaya, since it is absolutely everywhere. So seeing them kind of forced apart in this is quite traumatic.
It's genuinely quite upsetting.
Within and without the narrative. Yeah. So you're really, really rooting for these crazy kids. I have very high hopes for this film.
I saw a story yesterday saying he had confirmed that they were in fact married, and it was the most oblique confirmation you can possibly imagine in your life. But if they are married, I think we all wish them well. If they're not, we still wish them well. I just, you know, and good on them for making everybody wonder about it, quite frankly. It's nobody's business.
I like them. I'm rooting for those crazy kids. I think this looks very, very good. I echo your sentiments, Hellspells. I'm worried that this is going to be overstuffed. There's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
There's Banner and the Hulk. You got to set up that relationship and pay it off. Now, obviously, the guest star in these Spidey movies that are MCU, but also MCU adjacent because they're mainly produced by Sony, you know, whether it's Tony Stark or Nick Fury in Far From Home or Doctor Strange in No Way Home, they haven't dominated, really. They haven't really been in it that much.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't expect Ruffalo or Banner to be in it this much either. But then you have this mysterious bad guy who I don't know who that is. There's Sadie Sink knocking around. Is Sadie Sink the bad guy? Is she in this trailer? I didn't see her.
I believe she's the hooded one that you see on the Metro.
Is,
yes.
Okay,
people
but
have
not
done,
the baddie.
Well, it's hard to say what she is. She's wearing a hood, which is never a good sign.
It's certainly implied that that is the bad guy, but that might be a misdirect, so we don't really know.
Okay, because a lot of people put two and two together whenever she was cast in this and were going, oh, well, the X-Men are coming, and she's redhead, so she's Jean Grey.
Possible.
A lot of people were going, she might be MJ from another dimension.
Another dimension.
She might even be Gwen Stacy. Or she might be a completely different character. I don't know, but maybe she is the baddie. That would be quite an interesting little wrinkle.
Yeah.
I think there's been talk of the chameleon or something like that as the baddie, but I don't think that's what's going on here. Then you have Michael Mando as a scorpion, but I feel like that's something that happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, that could be like an opening scene, maybe. Potentially, but we don't know. And then obviously you've got to set up a bit more of the Frank Castle relationship as well.
Because they haven't had one.
No. So that'll be interesting.
And they seem to be quite pally in this.
Like maybe he's using Frank's hideout at that point where he brings MJ there in the trailer.
And it's one of those things where you're going, okay, kid, he's literally a mass murderer. Why are you hanging out with this dude?
Maybe he isn't. He is in this scenario, I guess.
I mean, he's
killed a whole bunch of
people. He's murdered.
Yeah. It's kind of his whole thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean,
His CV is just a list of people that he's murdered. Like, that's his whole thing.
In fairness, his whole thing is punishing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would be called the mass murderer.
Yeah, but he doesn't, like, it's not like he gives them a light spanking. Like, it generally involves...
Wait a second.
You've got to stop. Come
on. You are deliberately baiting Helen now. I know you are.
I don't know what you're referring to.
Wow.
Helen, the prospect of being lightly spanked by John Bernthal as a Punisher.
Sounds just, gosh, wow. I can't imagine.
Helen's been a very naughty girl.
This is a PG-13. It has rapidly turned into an NC-17.
Good Lord.
This is wild.
This is terrible.
They've got to set up a relationship as well. And there's a lot to pay. The Hand are in there. The ninja army.
Yes.
Yeah. Again, you kind of hope that's a one scene sort of big action, you know, set piece and not really much more. But you still have to set it up. You still have to explain what's going on.
Yeah. Destin Daniel Cretton, of course, delivered, I think, some of the best action scenes in the MCU in Shang-Chi. And I'm hoping that he can do the same here as well. Fingers crossed that that's going to be good.
Speaking of Zendaya films, there was also the first look at Shrek 5.
Donkey!
There was. And do you know what? Like, in my mind, Shrek has become something of an object of hate to me. The films, the character, everything about it. It occupies a very negative space in my brain. And so I was eye-rolling exceptionally hard when this came out. And yet, having watched the trailer, and I hate myself a little bit for it, I found myself somewhat charmed despite myself.
I wonder if you've been spending too much time with me, because I sort of somewhat feel that way about Shrek. I think all of the Shrek films, including the shorts, all have the same emotional arc, which is Shrek wants to be alone and then realizes the value of family, yada, yada. I wonder if that will be repeated here, and I hope they've come up with something else for him to do. Although this trailer suggests not, that he is still just complaining about everyone around him. I think there is a huge, huge sea, ocean of goodwill to these films in a generation below us. Younger people are big Shrek fans, and particularly the sort of younger millennials are very big Shrek fans. Almost as a generational thing, it seems. So they are presumably going to fill cinemas for this. But yeah, there were some good bits in this trailer. So it seems to be Shrek, Fiona, and at least two of their children. Last I looked, there were three of them. So I don't know.
Oh my God. One's been eaten.
No, but maybe one is already, you know, they're going in search of the one who isn't on screen. Or maybe I was miscounting because I only watched it once.
Is Donkey still married to the dragon?
I believe so.
I assume so, because you're not going to get a divorce from a dragon, are you?
Well,
I wouldn't fancy your chances.
I think the dragon might have eaten one of the Shreklings.
I mean,
that is probably a deal breaker.
Yeah, that would.
You'd break up over that.
I don't know. She's very winsome and terrifying.
Winsome and terrifying. Yeah.
So they seem to go to further away, which in search of something or other, and end up in prison at one point. And
yep.
Donkey sings annoying songs. I mean, Donkey, like, no notes, 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Still a perfect
Always
character.
Donkey.
The Shreklings, I guess, we're going to have to see how they fit into it. Presumably, Zendaya is one of them. Yes, she's Felicia. And then you've got Marcelo Hernandez as Fergus and Skylar Gisondo, we love him, as Farkle. So, I don't know. Hopefully, it'll be good.
It has been incredibly 16 years since Shrek Forever After.
Which
so,
wasn't very good. It wasn't.
I can't really remember it.
Was that the one with Prince Arthur or was that Shrek 3? I think it was...
Which one's the one with Prince Arthur?
I think it might have been Forever After.
Who's Prince Arthur? Remind me.
Justin Timberlake?
Oh, was that 3 or 4?
Yes, that's my question.
Okay. I have no idea. Clearly we would not do well in a Shrek quiz.
Yeah, this is where we need Ben.
Ben's in Liverpool at the moment. He is unavailable to us. There is no means of communication through which we can contact him.
No, there is not.
To ask this. So I don't know or care which one that was. But it's been 16 years since Shrek Forever After is my point. And has Shrek maintained cultural cachet in that time? Or has he lost a little bit of the green sheen in that time, do you think? Because if I'm right in thinking, the Shrek... exhibition or the Shrek...
Shrek-sibition.
Shrek-sibition. What was it? The one at the County Hall in London? That's now the Paddington.
Yes, that has become
Paddington. Exhibition, right?
It was quite fun. I went when it was Shrek.
Right.
With small niece and
nephew. So that was keeping Shrek in the minds of the little ones, right? And obviously there's the Shrek musical, which returns periodically and appears like Brigadoon. It shows up in a theatre every now and again and then just disappears for 100 years. But otherwise, is Shrek the big noise at it used to be and he used to be at the box office? You know, how's this movie going to be received, I wonder, when it opens next year?
Next year. I think that there was a lot of hype for it. At the end of The Last Wish, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, where they sort of had the little sting suggesting that Shrek would be back, there was a lot of excitement. And I think this trailer has had a large reaction online. So I feel like there's an audience there.
I was baffled by the amount of excitement at the end of that, because I was like, I could give no fucks if Shrek comes back. But I gave no fucks about Puss in Boots until I saw The Last Wish.
Yeah,
and I
was suddenly
like, oh, okay, so if they did something like that, which they are clearly not doing here, that would be great. But this looks like it's more of the same, but maybe with a little bit of maturity to it, maybe a little bit more trajectory, a little bit more interest, some new jokes, some new situations, some new characters.
I mean, look, you know, when's the last time Zendaya signed up to a film to do an animated voice and the film was not much cop, you know? Has she ever been Michi? I don't think so. So I'm sure that she's signed on because the script is great.
Did either of you watch the trailer for The Last House, Louis Leterrier's
new horror film,
which is extraordinarily COVID-coded, which is, this has got Greta Lee and Wagner Moura in it, and they are in their house, and they try to leave, and the door won't open. Obviously, that's something that's happened to all of us at one point or another, but the door won't open, the windows won't open, the windows won't break, they cannot get out, they're stuck in the house. And then, as we understand from the trailer, it's not just them, it's everybody stuck in their houses. Lockdown metaphor here. But kind of what throws you in the trailer is they say like day one, day two, day 31, and then it goes straight to like day 1,200 and something. You're like, ooh, shit. And then there's more supernatural gubbins going on. But this is coming to Netflix very soon. And I have to say, yeah, I really want to see this.
Yeah, it looks really, really creepy. It's an interesting one to have in the same year as the other family who are transported to like dinosaur world.
The end of Oak Street.
In their house. So I think we're basically scared of our houses, but we're also scared of leaving them.
Right. It's definitely delayed COVID trauma, I think, that's bringing all these films up. But yeah, this looks good.
Would you be able to survive if you were locked in your flat right now? If we were locked in this studio, we'd be dead within a couple of days.
Yeah. But Helen
if
would
you
kill
were
us both.
In your flat right now, do you have enough stuff to survive for 3 years? Do you have enough stuff to plant, to grow, to drink? I presume, does water get cut off at some point? Where does the water come from?
It seems that electricity and water continues because they would then be dead very quickly.
All right, so who's providing the electricity and the water?
Aliens.
Are there people trapped in their electricity plants?
Are they still running up bills? Like, what's happening with that?
Well, I mean, if there's magic forces sealing you in, you've got to assume that, you know, they can hand wave a lot of this
magic
stuff.
Magic did it and ran away.
Yeah, okay. Magic did it.
Okay.
Magic water, magic electricity.
Okay.
Magic sewage. Because, you know, if your flush doesn't work, you've got a real problem.
This is very, very true.
That's the other thing. Like, they're growing plants, right? You know, they took to eat 1,200 days. You remember what happened to COVID? Where's the toilet paper coming from? Bet that's not covered in the film.
Yeah, you can't just get... Okay, well, here's another thing. Could you get like an Amazon delivery through a drone?
I'm guessing not.
Can a drone leave?
Well, they literally cannot open a window. So they wouldn't be able to receive the package.
Have you heard of letterboxes?
Have you heard of the chimney?
Well, so you're saying every day literally is Christmas
Eve. If it works for Santa Claus, it could work for drone deliveries.
Well, yeah, fucking Santa's trapped.
You know, when you're talking to Amazon, like, please... You know, in the delivery notes, please drop down chimney.
Yeah, the only thing I get down my chimney is bees these days, unfortunately. So,
Not
the bees.
In the interest of winning another Segway Award, you said Wagner Moura is in the Last House, of course.
Of course.
He is also in talks. Oh, my word.
Oh, Segway.
He is also in talks to join the Ocean's 11 prequel.
Ooh.
Which is
Ocean's 10?
Prepped right now. To star Margot Robbie and Bradley Cooper, who is also writing and directing it.
Okay.
Is that not exciting you?
It's unexpected.
Wagner Moura, more than Bradley Cooper, if I'm honest.
What?
Really?
Yeah. But he's good. I think he's good.
What's Bradley Cooper done to you?
Yeah, what's your beef with Brad?
Well, I did have to sit through a couple of his films that I wish I hadn't, but you know.
But that's the same with Wagner Moura.
Hey, I quite like his films.
He's not unimpeachable.
He's been in some bad films.
He's been in some good films, but so is Bradley Cooper. What's your problem with Bradley Cooper?
I'm not saying I have a problem with him. Why is our voices going up like this?
Why do you hate Bradley Cooper?
Why do you want him to die?
You do not like to be hanging with Mr. Cooper, that is for sure. What's going on?
I don't know. I just
name one of these bad films. Burnt. All right, shut up.
Joker.
Joker.
He produced it, but
I'm not blaming Bradley Cooper
Maestro.
And Joker. Maestro was good. What are you talking about?
It was well done, but you know, it wasn't fun. Nightmare Alley wasn't fun either.
Nightmare Alley is a fucking great film.
He's gone very high pitch. You know he's upset.
It's hurting my ears.
You come from my boy Bradley.
Uh huh.
My best bud, Brad.
Best bud.
I'm shocked by this. I'm stunned. Not into silence, sadly,
but
there you go. I think this is a really unexpected turn for Bradley Cooper, that he's writing and directing this, and there's a big old tentpole that's going to come out next year. It's going to start shooting soon.
Any day, I guess, yeah.
And it'll be out next year. And they've been talking about this for years. I think it might be 60 set, or that was the idea originally, and Jay Roach was going to direct it, and had Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, and then Gosling went off. Jay Roach went off. And then comes Bradley Cooper. Now, of course, is this thing on the movie that was Cooper's last as director, which I really liked.
Was pretty good,
yeah. I thought it was terrific. Actually, it's my favorite of his films as director. I think he's a really, really good director. Tanked, I think is the polite way of saying it. So maybe he's thinking, well, in order to be able to make films like that, again, I have to do The One for Them. And if The One for Them is me and Margot Robbie looking cool in doing a casino heist of some kind. Yeah, I'm on for that.
That does sound okay. All right, fine. He's also in talks this week for a Sean Penn film about January 6th. He would play a police officer at the Capitol, I guess.
Yes.
It sounds like when is he going to make that if he's...
Well, apparently he's going to make it after he finishes the Oceans movie.
Well, good luck with that. That sounds like a busy, busy couple of months.
Hey, speaking of prequels, my...
Oh, the segueing continues.
God, the segueing is off the charts good. There is a rumor. I don't know how confirmed this has been yet, but there was a rumor. Ben sent me a text yesterday going, oh my God, that Evil Dead Wrath, which is the next film of the Evil Dead conveyor line after Evil Dead Burn, which is out in a few weeks over here. Evil Dead Wrath just finished filming in New Zealand and will be out in 2028. Will be a prequel. Will be an Evil Dead prequel set in 1972. Now, I don't know exactly where this has come from because I didn't do any investigative digging other than just looking at Ben's text and going, oh, that's interesting. But what do you make of that?
I mean, I care nothing for Evil Dead, as you know, so I don't care. Yes. But the thing is, it's twofold. I don't like the Evil Dead films, and the more recent ones, I literally don't watch because I am told that they are gnarly beyond words.
Yes,
and I don't have the constitution for it. So this is yet another film I don't plan to watch.
I'm glad I came to you, Helen. Yes.
Great, thanks. Thanks so much, James. it's interesting. I don't know how much explanation we really want of Evil Dead as a concept. It's one of those things that maybe works with an element of mystery, confusion, which is not to say that a prequel will necessarily explain too much, I suppose. And there were elements of prequeliness in Rise, in the fact that the record that they play obviously takes us back to, what was that, 1920s or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So, you know, there was an element of, oh, this has happened before, you know, there's an untold story there. So we kind of have that set up, I guess, already. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I wouldn't be averse to them going slightly less gnarly and slightly more comedic. But equally, I can't deny Evil Dead Rise was really effective.
Yeah. This is a franchise that's definitely gone away tonally from Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness and has very much gone for the
gore hounds.
Yeah. The gnarl. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. But I'm excited about this. A prequel. The same text I saw was a story. Someone had written a story about it going, this is the first time there's been a prequel, or first time the earliest movie, you know, in the franchise. And like Army of Darkness is right there.
Medieval Dead. People.
Medieval Dead. Yeah.
Are you surprised that this has already finished shooting in May 2026? I think it technically finished. And isn't out for 2 years?
Yeah.
Or a year and a half at least?
Yeah.
That feels like an unusually long post-production period for an Evil Dead movie.
I wonder if they're trying to not overwhelm audiences with them. And maybe they'll bring the release date forward. I don't know.
Could do.
But, there's evidence to suggest that it can go both ways, right? You can hit audiences with a film a year from a franchise or a couple of films a year and they'll lap it up. But it comes a time where it's maybe a little bit of oversaturation kicks in. And maybe they're worried about doing that with the Evil Dead franchise.
Maybe so.
But all I know is that this sounds intriguing and exciting. And as an Evil Dead fan, I don't know if I've ever mentioned that in the podcast. I am excited, and bring it on. Yes, please. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay.
One last thing. Anya Taylor-Joy has joined the hunt for Gollum.
Yeah, as a new elf.
Yeah, she's an elf.
Called Serenity. Just Seren.
Seren now. Because when I saw this, I was like, she's playing Galadriel.
Nah.
Because that would make sense. But no, she's playing Seren. Is Cate Blanchett in this?
Not that we know of, I believe.
No? Okay. So any speculation, you people who have read... What was it, James? Those things where the pages were bound together?
Books.
You've read some books, including these...
Specifically The Lord of the Rings.
Specifically The Lord of the Rings. Can you speculate on who Seren might be?
No.
Great.
Presumably, look, she's one of the sort of more huntery end of the elf, you know, spectrum. You know, it goes from like nobility who lie about all day and just like... Or like la 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 and talk really slowly.
Diaphanous gowns.
And then there's the sort of the more tends to be associated more with the woodland elves, like Legolas's people rather than Galadriel's people.
Thank God you were rescuing that, because that started to sound like you had not read a book.
I have read
a book. You were absolutely faffing around there. You were floundering.
Wow.
But then you brought it back.
Thanks so
much. With some of that book learning of yours. So well done you. I'm excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, does this film need to exist? Maybe not, but are we excited to go back to Middle Earth? Absolutely.
Oh, cannot wait.
Cannot wait.
Exciting stuff. Hey, do you know what else is exciting?
What's that?
Guests.
Hurrah!
Shall we have some guests?
Who we got?
We have Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. I don't really know what they've done. I'm going to quickly Google them.
Okay.
But maybe you can fill this in.
No, I'm buzzed about this. This is exciting.
Oh, that's very good.
And Chris has got a massive...
Yes, I have a massive Jesse.
Yeah.
I'm very, very excited about this movie. This movie, of course, being Toy Story 5, which is the...
Counts fingers. Or thumbs.
Well, counting my thumb, I have five fingers on my left hand.
Four fingers, one thumb.
Yes, this is the fifth movie in the Toy Story franchise, which, of course, back in 1995, Matt Damon gave. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, I'm so old. I'm going to die soon. Back in 1995, Toy Story came out and introduced the world to, well, Pixar, of course, but also to Woody and Buzz. Those lovable toys who come to life when you're not looking. The premise of this movie is fucking terrifying.
It's great.
Absolutely terrifying. Anyway, we've loved Woody and Buzz and the gang and their adventures over the years, and now they're back. Andrew Stanton, Pixar legend, is at the helm of this movie, and it sees Woody, who of course went his separate ways at the end of Toy Story 4, brought back into the fold by Buzz and Jesse whenever some tech is introduced into the life of their new... toy overlord. I don't know what you call the child. What do you call those small people? Children.
Yeah.
Bonnie and they send out the distress signal, and Woody answers the distress signal, and things unfold from there. Now, Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, legendary actors, of course, have been voicing Woody and Buzz in the films from the off. And when they came to London recently to promote the movie, I jumped at the chance to sit down with him in a London hotel room. Had a ton of fun. Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Woody, Buzz, enjoy. This is for the Empire podcast.
You guys came to our
magazine a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, Tom and Tim, that's where I want to start, because you told Empire magazine something. Tim, you told Empire magazine something.
Oh boy.
That I want to dig into deeper. The two of you have obviously never worked together in live action, but apparently you've been pitching Tom... Charlie Kaufman.
I pitched. We did the Jungle Cruise.
We were going to do the original Jungle Cruise.
Okay,
but they didn't want to. They wanted a period piece. I wanted to do a current thing where it you don't know as the audience, because it's these two actors, but you'll go, where have I heard this before? You know, there would be little lines of, like, his name would be Freddie, and I'd go, come on, Freddie. And then my name is Lutz or something like that. So, Lutz, come on, Lutz. So if it,
oh, come on, Lutz. Yeah.
And there's been two stories that I pitched to him, and we tried one. The script got there, and Disney just, they didn't want to make a joke about current Jungle Cruise.
Okay. Yeah,
and
okay.
it was a little too scary for them. And I've pitched it to a couple of times. I just like to see it because I'd like to see Buzz as an individual, that same guy and the same connection, not liking each other at first and realize they were very much alike. And there was a detective story. I won't get into that whole story, but a detective where
so you fleshed his out.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be very interesting because it's what's powerful about Toy Story is Buzz and Woody. That's how the whole thing started. The whole thing's based on a friendship that we all understand. The best things in our lives is a friendship somewhere. As you said earlier, doesn't matter how long we haven't seen each other.
You pick up right where you left off. Yeah. We're also with these guys that are in this gig. It's like, I've been doing this since I was 7 years old. What if you told a story like that? Yeah. And we just instantly fall into these themes that we think would be great in order to imagine. But it's very different than, you know, let's start from scratch. And, you know, sometimes we just don't fit into the grand unified scheme that Disney has mapped out for its corporate structure for the next 44 years.
That sounded scary just
now. Okay. Don't go into that inner sanctum.
You're kind of spooky, right?
You don't ask those questions of the people.
Very uncomfortable right now. This is a little, because we are in Disney's world right now.
We are. We all are.
A couple guys dressed like Mouse come in there and go, yank me out.
So would this have been a live action thing? Like a low budget live action thing with the two of you walking
around?
It
didn't necessarily have a low budget. I don't know where that came from.
No, but just like lo-fi. So you could shoot it on run and gun, you know.
I just think it'd be weird. Number one, it would be fun to actually work with them because these you don't actually get to work with.
It's just bye.
The way that I interact with him, this being a compliment, this is a very good actor. Is a stand-up comedian. I've worked with great actors. They've taught me a lot. I've been very, very blessed to have really good actors go, look at me when you're talking. Mm. And I've learned how to be an actor. As I said, Philadelphia was one of my favorite movies. And the performance that he did, you're just like going, I bought it. Yeah. That's a good performance. And to do a movie with him would be very fun to respond to him. I think it would be great.
Which we do not get to do in real life when we shoot the Toy Story movies. No. And we call it shooting even though we're recording them. We're not even in the same room at any given time.
My fear is that we're doing a movie and halfway through the first scene, Tom goes, this isn't going to work.
That's, you know, I'm going to say, I cannot look at you I am talking.
I can't. Well, this seemed like a good idea. You know, Tim, good idea, you know, good script. Can't do it.
I'll work on Monday. You work on Tuesday. I'll work on Wednesday. You work on Thursday. We'll take Friday.
Didn't My Three Sons was like
that? Oh, yeah. Just, you know, you did your what? You
Fred McMurray, he would come in 2 days a week and just, he was always in the rocking chair talking, and there was nobody in the scene.
I know that for a fact. They would change his sweater and give him a different paper, newspaper.
Oh, wow.
He just said that. Well, Chip, I think maybe you should have a talk with her about that. You know? We could do that till the cows come home.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, even back on the first Toy Story, you know, that famous scene where you are a sad, strange little man, you have my pity, you are a toy, that scene. Obviously, you weren't in the same booth, who recorded first? What were you acting off
when you said those lines? The memory I have, because I have a series of writers, both on my TV shows and when I stand up, that help with it. I basically
write. This whole empire.
You put it that way, yes, an empire, more of a tyrant situation, is we ad-libbed that joke.
Okay.
And I don't remember the process of it. I'm reading it. He's screaming at me because he's, you are a toy, and he was getting me mad. And then my thing goes down and said, and it was an ad-lib line, you are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
Wow.
And this was a comedy bit I'd been doing, and it fit there. And at that point, as I recall, and again, it could be my memory, because it helps me, is the room burst out laughing. And this was at a point when it was kind of back from when Robin Williams did his movie, where they let him let him ad-lib quite a bit.
Yeah.
And the first, when I started ad-libbing and they were working, it was early enough in the process that they didn't have the thing already set up.
Right.
If I ad-libbed a line over a image, they go, oh, that's funny, but you know,
Doesn't quite work.
It's not gonna.
Yeah.
You know, we did it. They did a fake version of it for the electronic press kit where we were literally in the same studio.
Yeah.
What is never used in the movie, but it looked like it. And it's honestly a good thing we didn't do that because we didn't get any work done. All we were goofing and riffing.
But it is amazing to me that we never even tried it.
That's true. Yeah, I have asked. Can't you do a thing where we're surrounded by sound baffles or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I said, you never even get even Doc at our Disney. Kane, I said, why don't we do that at least?
And because it really won't work. Technically, it's impossible. And I'm going to say, you know what year it is, and we are still essentially recording this the same way that Walt himself did the voice of Mickey Mouse in 1936.
I do not understand it. I just directed and did a music video with Divine, my son-in-law, and I did the filming of it. And I'm not used to sound people that actually work with David Newman. His team did it. And when he's singing live, the drums and the guitar are so loud, you can't actually hear him in the studio.
Yeah.
So they have to take him out. He has to sing it by himself. Then they pipe it back into it. And I said, so he's not actually singing it. He is singing it. It's that, and we'll match it up to that. And when you tape two guys talking, anything he talks over me, we can't use any of that.
No.
And I said, we have to have a clip of your voice and we will put it together.
Yeah.
So it is.
We should try doing podcasts like that.
Something
On a Thursday, you lean there and you ask all the questions, and we come in on the following Sunday and Wednesday and provide answers. And yet you cut it together. It looks like we're in the same room.
We don't have to sync up our diaries.
Yeah, that's all you got to do.
It's so good. I can take the day off.
I can see what the questions are in advance.
Because now you're saying, because none of this could actually really be happening right now.
The problem is we're all talking over each other right now because this is real. But that would be. Hello, Tim. Hello, Tom.
Exactly.
And what was little it like? Gap. There's a little gap.
Just a little gap, and I just wait.
We still, even on regular movies now, we will be talking, we'll be shooting something, and the sound mixer, the guy literally on the board, I said, hey, there was a little overlap on the dialogue there. And so
Then they have to use the whole, they'd have to use that whole scene if there's overlap. And there are movies that they let that
Unless you literally start all over completely from scratch and make it up, in there's stuff that they simply cannot
use.
Yeah, it's mad.
Now I'm depressed.
It's very depressed.
Or there's the guy, you're shooting on a street somewhere and there's a guy with a leaf blower, three blocks away.
Yeah.
And the guy that, no, we still have the leaf blower. You can't.
Got to wait for the planes to go overhead.
No.
Odd story, but I did Santa Claus, the first Santa Claus in Toronto. We did the whole scene in the park, which is, I'm in 5 hours of makeup, not a guy that's used to that. I had no idea how uncomfortable 62 pounds of fat was on me. And we did the whole scene, very emotional. Little girl came in and whatever it was. And then I get this note, we have to ADR some of that. And I go, what? We're outside. He goes, you go into this. And the whole scene was turns out the sound engineer had a hearing difficulty. Always good to hear that the sound guy has an earring. There was a buzz throughout the entire scene. I had an ADR the entire 20-minute scene, and there's nothing quite as frustrating.
Oh my god!
And you have to match up your voice to your.
It's the thing they never tell you when you're studying acting that you have to go in and recreate it. This is why we do not work together on the Toy Story movie. That's why we're all alone in with a microphone. And that's what
because it'd be 4 hours long.
My Lord. Yeah.
Just Woody and Buzz riffing. But Tim said as a stand-up that he learned something from you about acting as a man who played a stand-up.
You're going back
Tim
there.
About that.
I am in the thrall of a stand-up's ability to be able to control the whole damn thing themselves. And when you are in the presence of a comedic master, which I heard you are.
It's on your Wikipedia.
There's an aspect of one person and a microphone that to me is like, that's Mark Twain. That is the greatest storytellers ever. It's been one person holding sway, right back to the days of Erg the caveman, who could tell the story of today's mammoth hunt better than anybody else in the cave. You know? And that's him.
Erg
Erg, U-R-G-G, two G's, thank you.
Erg, caveman. And then the mammoth is coming right at you.
Exactly.
I didn't even see him. Had
one. What is Erg holding there?
He's got a rock.
Yeah, or a bone,
he's got the speaker stick. I control the speaker stick.
Someday this will mean something.
Is this and all everybody is? Else is like, hold for a laugh, hold for a laugh.
Yeah.
And then we'll put that wouldn't that be funny if there was a caveman that was funny? Have you ever talked to Erg? Everything's horrible. Everybody's got diseases and we can't eat. Caveman. But that guy, Erg, the one mastodon had one short the tusk was shorter.
Why do you tell me this, honey? I'm not as funny as Erg.
Had to have been a funny caveman, even in those days.
So, by the way, all right, we just found the live-action movie that we can do.
Oh, this is it.
I fancy myself the leader of this clan. But you come in and talk about the army with the flatheads.
Would Erg go, where are you from? Which cave are you from?
Anybody here from the swamp? What is that?
That'd be funny. Just funny, for no reason, a funny caveman. There must have been one. There must have been one.
There must have been the first stand-up.
If we were going to do this, you know what? I would be the second banana. I would essentially be
the
Bud Abbott. What are you talking about? Put that down. You weren't there. How can you say that?
This would be amazing. What if you remade Punchline, but in the Stone Age?
Something like that.
Yeah. That would be incredible.
Who's the, you know.
Yeah, me in a loincloth. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what every comedian says to me about Punchline?
Yeah.
Is that, number one, it would have been better if it had truly been funny throughout the whole thing now. And also, what was this locker room,
that's,
you guys?
That's every comic, when I saw, they go, where's the locker room in the club? Downstairs, he and Sally going, anyway, you pull out your hat and your beret, and I go, what in the hell? Who designed it, the set deck? Where's the locker room? When the comics get done, they come downstage.
Well, you see, we needed an arena other than backstage in order to have a different brand of conversation.
It was just weird that all of a sudden, every comic watched go, what in the hell?
Locker room.
Did they? Who had the combination?
Well, the original name of the movie was Punchline Junior High. So they just snipped off the junior high of it and kept Punchline.
Amazing. Guys, I've got to let you go. But just one very, very quick thing about this movie, because obviously Buzz and Woody do not age, but you guys, I believe, do.
Yeah.
And your voices have changed maybe over the years. Obviously, yours hasn't, Tim, but Tom's,
But can you imagine us right now, if we had lived our lives the way they did in the 40s and the 50s, smoking filterless Chesterfields all day long,
to infinity
getting
and
some version of inebriated every day at 4:45, 4:30, 4:15,
come, hurry up. We got to get back to Bonnie's room, Buzz. It was a wake-up call. It wasn't different for Mr. Perfect, because his voice, he's modulates it well.
I'm still the boy soprano.
I had to have little voice lessons, because in a very calm way, the Pixar folks says, Buzz is sounding a little old. And I go, okay, I hear you. And I didn't know how to help that, but they take a vocal coach in New York City that does opera and Broadway. Uh-huh. Told me how to warm up. Mm-hmm. You just can't. Wow. At your age, you do need a little warm up.
And Tom, you just go straight into it?
Oh, he's just
straight into it.
Yeah.
I just pump up the heart rate and let it come out of my neck. That's what I do.
But flail the arms.
That's it. The flail the arms around gets going.
Oh, it sounds amazing. Guys, I can't wait to see you as cavemen, comedians. That's going to be something else. Erg. Amazing. Yeah. Erg the caveman and his friend.
And will become his agent at some point. The crowd's a little sparse tonight. Turned out the saber-toothed tigers took out a couple of the members of the tribe. So don't mention that.
Don't mention that. Anyway. All right, you're on.
And
amazing.
Totally. Ladies and gentlemen, the comedy stylings of Erg.
All right, that was Tom Hanks and Tim Allen talking about Toy Story 5. And that's what we're going to do right now, because it is the reviews section of the show. Not a lot of movies out at the moment. Certainly not a lot of movies out this week because of the World Cup. I just assume it's because of the World Cup over here that they are holding a lot of stuff back. And Toy Story 5 feels like it might be World Cup proof. Not least, I think, because parents will take their kids to see this at times when the World Cup is not on.
Yeah, I think the time difference is helping with kids' movies, at least.
I genuinely think that's probably what they factored in. They were like, well, they tend to go during the day or early evening, and
because,
we'll
I mean,
be okay.
For this World Cup, we are getting like one big film a week.
Yeah.
There have been previous years, World Cups and European Cups, I think, where we didn't even have that. So so I do think the time difference helps, but it's still a wasteland out there.
It's
for a lot of things. But this is a big movie and it is in cinemas and it is pretty good, I think. So as Chris set up in the when he was talking about the interview, this is a high-tech tablet called a LilyPad, voiced by Greta Lee, which is given to Bonnie in an attempt to kind of help her make friends. That's the hope that her parents have when they give her this. But of course, instantly she becomes obsessed. She's neglecting her toys. She's all about the screen time. She's playing online with her friends. And LilyPad is very smug about her ability to connect Bonnie with other people, for example, in her dance class, and help her make the friends she so desperately needs and not just sit all day playing with dolls. And Jesse, who is really the lead of this film rather than Woody and Buzz, voiced still by Joan Cusack, is like, no, I know best. I can help Bonnie more than you can. You're some weird new high-tech interloper. This is essentially Jesse's Toy Story 1. This is her Buzz, mm-hmm. in a way, right? Except, you know, LilyPad is, for most of the film, a little bit less charming than Buzz. So she's trying to help Bonnie make friends in her own way and ends up getting separated from her. And so the film becomes about not just helping Bonnie, but also getting Jesse back, but also, you know, dealing with this new threat and also trying to find a new equilibrium once again for the toys as their owner gets older and faces new challenges and faces new interests and has to figure out life once again. So that's kind of the setup. There are not so many new toys this time. There is quite a fun role for Conan O'Brien as another tech toy. He's a potty training toy that they meet in their travels, mm-hmm. Who is shaped like a roll of toilet paper.
Please tell me this is fictional made up for this film, because this weird bum-wiping robot is the stuff of nightmares.
I honestly don't know, but I would not be surprised if such a thing exists somewhere. It kind of feels like the kind of thing that somebody's come up with, right? So that's a bit weird. I find this really interesting. I think it's more focused, and I think it knows what it is more and what it wants to say more than Toy Story 4 did, which I thought was a film without a real purpose in life. This one, I think, has an actual point of view and an actual kind of problem it wants to deal with. I think screen time is a real angsty issue for particularly parents, but also just for society at large. If we're all on our screens the whole time, you know, what does that does that help us to do some things but stop us from doing other things? Is it real connection when we talk to people on the internet, or is it kind of a faux connection that actually impoverishes us compared to actually, you know, meeting up with our friends in person, playing with people in person? These kind of issues are really live issues, particularly now that we're facing AI and all of that. And I think that's a really meaty topic for Pixar to get their teeth into. Whether you think they really sink their teeth into that topic in this film is another matter.
Well, I don't think they necessarily land where you think they're going to land. I don't want to say too much, but it's not the anti-AI screed that I think people might be expecting. I think Andrew Stanton and Pixar are very aware of old man yells at cloud syndrome.
Yeah, I've kind of talked about this a little bit in the review, and I do think that there's, you know, they're based in the Bay Area. They are a tech firm. They started as a tech firm.
Yep.
They share a founder with Apple, for God's sake.
Yep.
You know, these are not going to be just old man yelling at clouding. If anything, I think they're remarkably reasonable in the end points that this film comes to. But along the way, you have some lovely character stuff. You have Jessie once again facing that lingering trauma of losing her first owner, Emily, and sort of really forced to confront that once again and go through that once again when she gets lost. And Randy Newman's score is vicious in using the emotional cues from When She Loved Me, the Sarah McLachlan song. Yeah.
Which kills you every time.
Just to like absolutely drive the knife into your heart and really tug the heartstrings. Against that sort of quite heavy stuff, there is also a sort of mostly unconnected subplot where a container full of Buzz Lightyear toys, high-tech Buzz Lightyear toys, because obviously in-universe, Lightyear did better than it did in our universe. So these new high-tech Buzz Lightyear toys are being shipped somewhere. The container falls off. They're all washed up on a deserted island. And a whole bunch of high-tech Buzzes then set out to get back to Star Command. And it's very funny and very charming and has almost nothing to do with anything. But I had a lovely time watching that as well. So weirdly, this is a Buzz and Jessie film, and Woody is nearly a cameo. He's a bit more than that.
He's a peripheral character.
He's a peripheral character here.
You genuinely could have made this without Woody.
You could have. You could. And it's lovely when he turns up and you're like, oh, I love that guy. He's great. Mm. But he is not the center of attention this time. And fair play to him for kind of stepping back in Jesse's favor.
Yes, very generous of Woody.
Very generous of like Tom Hanks turn up anyway. And by the way, I think that generosity runs through this. I said this in the review, but I'm still stunned by it. Keanu Reeves is fifth from last build. Now, in terms of the size of his role, that is correct. But in terms of he's Keanu fucking Reeves, he could have pushed himself up the cast list if he cared about it. And I think these are people who love these characters and love this series. Yeah. And don't do it for the ego.
Or the four lines of dialogue
that
he has.
Yeah. God bless them for it.
The Woody thing is really interesting because I think, did you think that worked? Do you think the focus on Jessie worked? It's one of, I think, several bold swings that Andrew Stanton, who, of course, if people don't know, is the genius behind WALL-E and Finding Nemo and John Carter. And
Good movie.
It's a good movie, but still. And, he is one of the founding fathers of Pixar. He was on the, he's been on the Pixar Parliament Brain Trust since the very, very beginning, pretty much. And he does things that feel new and fresh and different for the franchise, and the focus on Jessie is one of them. And if you said that to me going in to see this film, that the film was focused on Jessie and Woody and Buzz were very much background characters, supporting characters in this, I would have thought this won't support that. But it kind of does, to the point, like I say, you could have taken Woody out of this movie completely and maybe not missed a beat.
I think it was entirely necessary because this film doesn't need to exist. It feels to me like Toy Story 3 was a perfect ending to this series. And Toy Story 4 was this weird coda that didn't do anything or say anything particularly interesting. This, on the other hand, is for me almost like the midnight sun to Toy Story's Twilight, where it's essentially it's forefronting Jessie and she's dealing with the same existential crises that Woody and Buzz have dealt with previously, because you are retreading the same ground here. I don't feel there's a lot new here narratively, but I think seeing it through Jessie's eyes makes it more interesting. I totally get what you're saying about the tech stuff. I think you're right, that is kind of a salient thing. I just don't think they massively engage with it. Greta Lee is great. Lilypad isn't really positioned as a villain in this, but more of sort of a well-meaning, if misguided, new device. And it is something, it's definitely like every parent watching this is like, I get you. But I felt a little bit like this was kind of reheated Toy Story for me. It felt like it's the same thing. People aren't playing with toys anymore. It's like, we get it. We've been here. We've had these emotional beats. We've shed these tears. I didn't feel like shedding them again. And I felt like, with the exception of the Bluetooth buzzes, which I very much enjoyed, I didn't think the laughs were here massively for me either. So it's fine. I didn't hate this film at all. It felt inessential. But I like the new perspective, but it's definitely not. I mean, it's definitely better than Toy Story 4, but that's where I'd probably place it.
But did you like, or did you warm to, because in terms of other perspectives, it does something that no Toy Story movie has done before, in that it front and centers its human.
It does, yeah. I actually quite like the Bonnie aspect of it. And I think it has, because you're right, the humans haven't really felt tangible in the way they do in this. And Bonnie's actually, you shed a tear for Bonnie because she's just this lovely little girl who's really struggling with friendships. And lots of young children have that problem. And this is a problem that's exacerbated by reliance on devices and mean kids being mean on chat groups. So actually, yeah, I thought that was a really nice touch. And I think the sort of human aspect of it was probably the strongest, from an emotional standpoint. But it's the toy stuff. And some of the toys that we have come to know and love, Mr. Potato Head, all of those people, Rex, they're here, but they are very much in the background. They don't have a lot to do. They don't have a lot to say. So it feels a little bit less of that kind of chaotic comedy ensemble that maybe we're used to. But, it does give Jessie more screen time, but I think you also lose a little bit from it as well.
Yeah, I could have done with more, of that crowd and less of Mr. Smarty Pants. Yeah, which
I liked Mr. Smarty Pants.
He was good,
lot.
But I didn't love him. You just like him because he's got poo emojis on him.
He does.
He does.
That's
100%
the reason.
He's kind of in it more than Greta Lee.
Yeah.
Than Lily Pratt.
Yeah, he is.
Actually, which I did not expect at all. But Jimbo, let's be honest here. You went to see this movie for one reason and one reason only. Taylor Swift has written a song.
Five stars for Toy Story 5.
I was genuinely surprised. So the song plays over the credits.
It does. Yeah.
Oh, does it?
And
yeah.
It's,
okay.
It's not... I thought it was she was going to heartbreak the Sarah McLachlan. I thought that was the point of getting Taylor Swift in for this song.
Yeah.
And it's not that at
they
all.
They don't even go that way.
No,
they go
not
more
even
for cutesy rather than heartbreaking, which is, and it's quite, and it's lovely.
It's a nice
and
song.
It's peppy and it's quite, but it's not sad. It's
no.
not.
Well, you don't want a heartbreaking song over credits.
Well, but also, I don't think you can try and top When She Loved Me. I mean, don't even go near that. Like, you wouldn't be able to do it. So I think it was probably a good idea to take a tonal shift.
That's what we should have done as the question. What are the most heartbreaking songs in movie history? You know, like Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and Meet Me in St. Louis, or When She Loved Me in Toy Story 2. Or, you know, what are the ones that will absolutely wreck you?
My Heart Will Go On, Celine Dion.
It's a great song, though.
I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. From Armageddon.
Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins.
Oh, my word.
All of the Top Gun soundtrack. And
all of the Top Gun soundtrack and I'm going for Danger Zone.
It does take my breath away. But yeah, maybe that one. Maybe the one from Armageddon. I don't know. Maybe send that in to me on Instagram. We'll consider it for another week or so. I need to think about that. That's a really, really good question. Yeah.
Streets of Philadelphia is pretty heartbreaking.
Mm.
Philadelphia, just in case anyone's listening.
Yeah, as is Neil Young's Philadelphia, both of which were nominated for Best Original Song that year. One of the few times, I know this is my hobby horse, but one of the few times that category has not fucked
not
it up
sucked.
Monumentally. Yeah, but I don't want to miss a thing. I want to shake the hand of the daughter of the bravest man I ever met.
And we have shaken that hand.
We have shaken
that
hand.
We have shaken that hand.
When Bill Fickner came to the office for a web chat.
I've shaken Bruce Willis's hand.
Oh my God.
I've shaken Bill Fickner's hand. I've shaken Michael Bay's hand.
And Liv Tyler's hand, presumably.
No.
Oh, I have.
Have we?
Yeah, firm handshake.
You've shaken Liv Tyler's hand?
Yes, twice.
Wow.
Twice?
Did you ask permission to shake the
hand? Yes, I asked permission to shake the hand of the daughter of the bravest man I've ever met.
How many times do you reckon she gets that on a weekly basis?
I hope a lot. I really hope a lot.
I think I shook Bill Fickner's hand. I did a Q&A with him on stage, and I think I might have finished by asking, I want to ask permission to shake the hand of the man who asked permission to shake the hand of the daughter of the bravest man.
We had him in for a web chat. I think we said it then.
Yeah, we did say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a man.
I'm sure he gets that a lot.
But
as well.
She is the daughter of the bravest man he's ever met. So she should get the quote directed at her. Oh, yeah. When did you shake the Tyler's hand?
I've interviewed her for a few times for The Leftovers. I interviewed her for Incredible Hulk.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever interviewed her.
Quite a few times.
Hell's Bells, I know you did it recently with Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, but that was on Zoom.
That was on Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't shake the hand.
And
yeah,
I interviewed her for Two Towers as well.
Wow.
Nice.
It's exciting. What did we give this one?
We gave it 4 stars.
4 stars.
Specifically, I did.
Yes,
oh,
she did.
I was going to say, and who did that?
What idiot did that? Was me. Yeah.
And you did that. Okay. And you wrote it with tech?
With a crayon.
I wrote it with, on principle, I wrote it with crayon.
On
a stone select. Does that even work? And then I transferred it to email and sent it to John.
Amazing. All right. 4 stars then for Toy Story 5, which is in cinemas right now. Also in cinemas right now, very, very bravely going up against both Toy Story 5 and the World Cup and the US Open and everything else that's happening.
Queens has started this weekend, right?
Queens started, well, the...
Starting.
Ladies Queens was last week. The Men's Queens is finishing this weekend. So very exciting. So very, very brave of Virginia Woolf's Night and Day, I would say, to be released in this marketplace. Jimbo, tell us about this amove.
This is, fact fans, Virginia Woolf's longest book. And I would argue one of her least lauded, certainly her least talked about books.
She didn't write it very highly.
No, she did not.
I think it was one of her first.
Yeah, it's one of her early ones. Yeah. This is directed by Tina Garavi, and it is set in Edwardian England in 1910 in London. And you have Catherine Hilbery here, or Kit, played by Hayley Bennett. And she is, I would say, an amateur astronomer, which is an extrapolation from the novel. I believe it's mentioned once, I think, in the book. But here it's her whole defining personality. She's obsessed with the universe and the stars and telescopes and everything. And we meet her in a kind of chaotic falling off the roof moment when she's trying to look up through her tiny little telescope. All she wants to do is to study physics at Cambridge. This is not a time when women are allowed to study physics at Cambridge. Her father here, played by Timothy Spall, just wants her to get married. And he's trying to marry her off to her oldest friend, who is William, played by Jack Whitehall, on his foppish finest form. And a lot of it is about her looking at her place in society as a woman, you know, the repression of gender, fuck the patriarchy, all of that, and can she get a place at Cambridge? It's a really interesting way to kind of interpret this story, because you can kind of imagine this, because the book is much more about the various different relationships and suitors that she has, and will she get married to this person? Will it be this person? Who will she be forced to wed? There's a lot more of that in it, and that is almost entirely swept aside. And it focuses very much on her friend Cyril, who is her kind of...
Her cousin.
Yeah, it is her cousin, in fact, played by Monsieur Butler. And he's the one who encourages her and tells her to kind of find her own course and not to do what her father wants, and to buck against the patriarchal system. But it really is, it's kind of a slightly didactic, ever so fractionally dour at times look at, you know, how her dreams are being repressed by the society that she lives in. You can see that they could have gone a comedy route. They've obviously not opted not to do it. I actually think some of the emotional beats do land quite well, but a little bit for this, I found my attention wandering. Like, it's a little bit flat. It doesn't have a lot of sort of tonal variance to it. And you feel a little bit like you're being lectured. And there are moments, actually, when she kind of makes her case for why she should be allowed to study. It's actually very rousing. And it's, you know, you're like, come on! Like, you get really excited about that. But there are only a couple of those. And I think it lacks energy in other areas. I think it needed to be a slightly more rounded story with maybe more of a kind of an interesting thrust in the middle of it. But, you know, it's not bad by any stretch. It's just, it's a slightly odd way maybe to approach this book.
Yeah, I think they've tried to sort of give it that through line, give it that thrust of her intellectual ambitions, which is there in the book, but maybe not quite as overwhelming as you say. And there's some lovely sort of incidental scenes. So her parents are played by Timothy Spall and Jennifer Saunders. Her aunt is Sally Phillips, you know, really, really great supporting cast. Jack Whitehall as her fiance is actually very likably hapless. I thought he was really good. And all of the scenes with them sort of just chit-chatting in the background, I really enjoyed. I thought they were just really well
judged.
There's
a family photograph scene,
yes,
which is loads of fun.
That was loads of fun. But I think that a lot of the kind of, as you say, the thrust of it is very on the nose. And I obviously sympathize with all of this. I think it is pretty appalling that women were held back in the way that they were. And we did lose a lot as a result. And, you know, hey, equality is good for everyone. And yet I need something more for this film and from this film to really kind of make it sing in the way that you want. And I'm not sure that it quite gets there. It's only 90 minutes. This is chopped down.
For her longest book. Yeah.
Yeah, very chopped down. And obviously she wasn't exactly Little Miss Narrative, you know. It wasn't The Lord of the Rings or whatever. But at the same time, I think maybe a little bit more of the sort of the nuance and the character nuance might have helped it.
Yeah, I think so.
Not bad at all, and really good performances, and Hayley Bennett's really,
Hayley Bennett's great. Really likeable, really, really convincing.
Yeah.
With a very sort of like sharp English accent.
Yeah, but I just didn't 100% jive with it. I think I was a little bit zoning in and out as well. So, I don't know, but somewhere probably a low three. I think a two would feel harsh to me, personally.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. I just about had a three-star experience.
All right. There are a couple of other movies out this week that we have not had the chance to see. More Brave Counter-Programming from some hardy souls. We wish them all the best. There is a film, an animated film called Lesbian Space Princess. Despite that title, we haven't seen it. And we've given that one 3 stars. And there's another film out this week, a romantic drama, Cactus Pears, written and directed by Rohan Parashuram Kanawade. And we've given that one 4 stars. So sounds terrific. So check those out if you are getting along to the cinema and you're not seeing Toy Story 5 and you fancy seeing something else that's not the World Cup, then those are options for you. But anywho, on that note, that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun when we'll be joined by... For the last time, the Jackass boys are riding once more in ways that will frankly make your eyes water. And to celebrate the release of Jackass Best and Last, the final Jackass movie, we're joined by the king of the Jackasses, returning to the podcast, the great Johnny Knoxville, and the director of all five Jackass movies, Jeff Tremaine. So that's right. A tremendous interview.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
Don't Knoxville it.
Oh, no. I hate when these minor celebrities come on the podcast and just try to inject their senses of humor in it. Get yourself a BBC Sounds podcast. Everyone else has one.
Ooh.
Ooh. Anyway, until we meet again, until that auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from my two minor celebrity colleagues of such lethal cunning. Goodbye, James Dyer.
Goodbye, Chris Hewitt.
Do you have any major celebrities on the Pilot TV podcast this
week? Only me, Chris. Only me.
Goodbye to Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to do whatever it takes to become a minor celebrity because I want to lend my voice to Shrek 5. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye. That was the worst Cameron Diaz I've ever done.
That was not your best.
No.